Around Comics, episode 26.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the producer of the show. Wait, where's Brian at?
His daughter is sick, Chris.
Now you're just making me feel bad. I was going to make a joke about it, but yes, for listeners out there, our dear Sal has taken the evening away from the show to be home with his daughter, who is not feeling well, but he's doing what all good fathers should. So
I turned the tables on you.
Yes, you did. Everyone out there, this is the second time we have recorded the intro because I am the producer of the show today, and I suck. So send all of your complaints about the audio quality to me today. So anyway, we are joined by our Around Comics regular, Mr. Tom Caters.
Hey, how's it going, everyone?
And our guest this week is the winner of our May contest. He is our longtime friend of the show, Mr. Matt Kramer.
Hello.
Matt, welcome to the show, and congratulations. Did you get your trade paperback?
Yes, I did. I received it on Wednesday after many problems with UPS.
But are you enjoying the Vampirella trade?
Yes, very much.
Good to hear.
Just in time for Halloween.
Yes, exactly.
This is going to be so bad, we're not going to air this till October.
And
so. Well, let me go over a couple front-end announcements here. Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please come by and introduce yourself. We would love to meet you. We had a couple forum members today, Rudiger and Dee Drace. They pop in here from time to time, so we hung out before the show a little bit. And they took advantage of Dark Tower's offer, which is a 20% discount on purchases made during our show recordings. Just mention Around Comics when you check out and receive 20% off your purchase. It's that easy.
Or point at us. I think that'd take it if they...
Scoff.
A scoff.
Throw tomatoes.
We
rotten,
count
rotten
saying,
vegetables.
What are those guys doing here as mentioning us?
Well, we just talked about our May contest. Don't forget about our June contest. This month, write a comics or Around Comics themed haiku and email it to info@aroundcomics.com. Please remember to include your name and city and country of residence, because we have a lot of people outside of the U.S. that listen to us, which is kind of cool. The response for this contest has been freaking awesome. We're getting tons
hundreds
of haikus every day.
Hundreds.
So we will end today's show with some of our haiku goodness entries.
We should do a haiku podcast. Apparently that is a market that is untapped yet.
We've had that many entries we could do. It's been awesome. A nice announcement for the website, which if you haven't gone to Around Comics, I definitely encourage you to. It is turning into just one of the best news and opinion sites out there, in my opinion. I can say that because Sal does that. Of course, you know, next week he's going to say, I've got to be home sick, so you have to run the website now and produce the show. I'm feeling very, very beat upon today.
Beat upon?
Yes. But anyway.
Such is your lot in life.
We have added blogs to Around Comics. We're very excited to offer a place for fans and creators to express themselves and keep us informed about what they're up to. We already have 6 blogs up and running with more on the way. Just go and check the community section of the site for more details. And I think, Tom, you have a blog, and Darth Kramer has a blog also.
Yeah, there's no reason why you have to listen to us talk about uninformed, you know, bullshit. You can also share your own ill-formed opinions.
Yes.
We can all have one and read none of them.
Now you can listen every Monday to Tom and check back throughout the week.
And read the same crap.
And Matt Kramer, I think you started a blog, right?
Yes, I did. I just can't make any posts in it right now.
Sal is working on that, so by the time that this episode airs, we should have the blogs all figured out. I would encourage everyone, if you enjoy Around Comics, please drop by the iTunes Music Store and write us a review. We would greatly appreciate it. A lot of podcasts ask you to vote at Podcast Alley every month. We'd just like you to write one quick review, be in and out and done. I'd like to thank the listeners who did so last week. I think we had three new reviews pop up.
Really?
Great. I check iTunes every day to see if we have new reviews. I'm so ridiculous that way. But whenever I see a new review, it makes me so happy.
Is it anyone we don't know or are not related to?
You know, I will not put reviews on there. You haven't. Sal hasn't. You know, we don't put reviews on there. We have had a couple.
Wink.
Wink. No. Yeah, we've had a couple guests that have. Matt was kind enough to put a review up there for us. So it's all listeners or former guests, which is the way to do it.
Thanks, Matt.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, guys, are you ready to actually talk about some comics? That's what we try and do here.
Of course.
Yeah, okay. I was waiting to see where Matt fell on this one. I guess popular opinion's going with the comics and stuff, haiku. So.
All right. Well, this week we are going to discuss the contest-winning topic that Matt submitted back in May to us. Here is what Matt's post from the forum that makes it responsible for him to be here today. His post was, I think that a great topic would be people from outside the comics world coming in to write comics like Kevin Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and Alan Heinberg, and others, as well as people in comics going outside of the world of comics to work, such as Jeff Loeb and Peter David. There are definitely pros and cons associated with each point. So there you go. That was Matt's post. I thought it would make a great topic for us to discuss. Writers that are crossing over from other mediums and vice versa. We'll get to some specific examples of that. But first, I want to talk with Matt. Why did you think that was going to be a good topic to discuss on Around Comics?
Yeah, why?
Well, it seems like over the past 10 years or so, a lot of people have been coming in from the worlds of film and TV to write comics, such as Kevin Smith and J. Michael Straczynski. And while this is intended to bring in all of their fans with them, I don't know how many of the fans have actually stayed in the world of comics. And I'm not saying that all of these stories have been bad or anything, but when you're paying big money to someone like Kevin Smith to write a miniseries where the fourth issue comes out 3.5 years after the third issue, that is less money that you can spend in developing new talent or just getting other books out on time.
Go ahead, Matt. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Matt, you go ahead.
All right.
Sorry.
I was saying that this may seem like it's a childhood dream for some of these creators, but it's also probably preventing some other up-and-coming creators from getting their work done. And, well, yeah, that's about it. So...
Well, it sounds like you see that there are some advantages to it, but it sounds like you also feel like there are a lot of people that are maybe getting pushed off to the side, that they're maybe a young creator ready to come up, but you know, then someone like, you know, Alan Heinberg or, you know, Charlie Houston, whoever, which I like their work, but you know, the comic companies, especially the big two, are giving these guys the chance before maybe some of the indie writers that have been in the industry, you know, toiling away for, you know, 10 or 15 years.
I also think, though, like, especially the guys you just mentioned, who's to say, like, if they had been around 20 years earlier, they wouldn't have just started writing comics instead of doing movies or writing novels. So I think part of it isn't just a fascination with getting people from Hollywood to write. It's almost become a necessity because of the market. That's what people want, you know, like, it's not just like a decision that, like, a switch that got flipped at one point. I
think that you have to look at some of the different creators that are coming into it, because you look at someone like J. Michael Straczynski, what he had a huge sci-fi fan base out there from Babylon 5 and some of his other works that he had done, and that was a big name to come into comics, where you look at someone like, you know, I'm going to mention him 20 times today, but you look at someone like Greg Rucka, who probably where you know, Greg Rucka is not a J. Michael Straczynski type name, and I don't know if there are more people that know about him through comics now as opposed to his work as a novelist. So I think there are different levels of...
Well, I think also there's different levels in the sense that there's a huge part of the public that has no idea who Jan Michael Straczynski is either.
Well, that's just true. But you look at a guy like Charlie Houston, who's writing Moon Knight now, and there's a lot more people that know Kevin Smith than Charlie Houston.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I'm just saying that it's not like... you know, Martin Scorsese is right.
Everyone knows who J. Michael Straczynski is. What are you talking about?
I just pissed off Chris.
Well, you know, here's one guy I'm going to throw out there, and I've Matt was very diligent in his research this week, so I have a list of about 20 creators anyway.
He missed one though.
Yes,
but I'm going to save that for the end.
No, well, yeah, he did.
No,
but I'm going to kind of mark these guys off. One guy that definitely had a even beyond a cult following that, I mean, rabid fans he has now come into comics, and that's Joss Whedon. You know, here's a guy that, you know, the movie Buffy and then the TV show and Angel and then, you know, Firefly, but this guy's writing pretty darn good comics these days. Matt, what do you think about Joss Whedon and his move over to the comics world?
Oh, I love Joss Whedon's comics. I love pretty much all of the work that he's done. I'm a big fan of Buffy and Angel. And Joss Whedon has actually done a little bit of introducing some things in comics that have actually transferred over to his TV and movies, because he wrote a miniseries a few years ago called Frey, which introduced some concepts that tied heavily into the series finale of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, and yeah, I loved Frey. It's you're talking about the big axe with the wood stake on the end of it that they used in the last season of Buffy.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it was. Whedon was always very good about giving little nods in the comics to the series, and you could, you know, they weren't totally separate. You could read the comics and actually draw more out of the TV show experience by reading them, which, yeah, it was really a nice exercise in taking another medium and adding to what the series was.
Exactly.
I think Whedon falls sort of into I sort of divide some of these guys up into two kind of groups. There's someone like Whedon who has very much a certain style to what he does. Like, you can tell if something's Whedon just by reading it, because that's the, you know, sort of like the way Bendis has a style.
You ever get the feeling in Astonishing that you can replace Emma and Cyclops and Wolverine and Kitty Pryde and replace them with Willow and Xander and Buffy.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not, if it's obviously works for him, so there's nothing wrong with that. There's guys like that mm-hmm. you know, you read their stuff and you know that is what it is. That's their style, and they've taken their style in whatever medium they've had before and sort of brought it to the comic book. You know,
I love his dialogue though. Love his dialogue, and it's definitely translating to the X world, but it's the most character driven X book that I've read in 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So
that's one.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead,
that's
Matt.
That's where Joss Whedon's strength lies. Is he just writes some incredible characters, and that's something that the X world has been missing since about 1980s.
Yeah, about the time before I left, actually, which was about 93, I think. I jumped off board from comics almost altogether, and they wrote me back in. Bastards.
Greg Rucka and his beautiful eyes.
Oh, Greg. Greg Rucka.
Queening country.
No, it's awesome, awesome stuff. I tell you what, another guy that his name doesn't get bounced around a lot, but Matt had it on the list, and I think rightfully so, and that's Michael Chabon. And he is, of course, the novelist that wrote Cavalier and Clay, which is a great novel, not just a novel about comic book creators, but it's just a great novel. He writes The Escapist, and another thing is that he was the screenwriter, of course, for Spider-Man 2. How do you, and we'll go back to Matt with each one of these to start off with, what do you think about Chabon as a comic creator and just a creator that understands the comic medium in general?
Well, I haven't read a whole lot of Chabon's work inside comics. My first exposure to him was actually reading Wonder Boys in college, mm-hmm. and I thought that was a good book. But I think one thing that Michael Chabon really does is he uses the comics medium in a really interesting way. Because from what I've read of The Escapists, it's very self-referential and pokes at the fourth wall, but it's also the pretty good stories. But I have to admit, though, that I really don't have a lot of exposure to him.
He's a very talented writer, and I really like the Escapist work that he's done. It's expensive.
So yes.
It's too expensive. But actually, I believe that Brian K. Vaughan is going to take over The Escapist for at least one issue. Is that?
No, he's writing the whole
series. Is he writing the whole series?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, you know.
Which I think is good. I think a series like that sort of needs someone like Vaughan, only because Chabon sort of has that same quality of, like, sort of poking at the fourth wall sometimes, mm-hmm. doesn't hold up. You can't read issue after issue of that sort of homage, almost. And it's good, but there's also a realm of...
Well, it comes out so infrequently that...
Yeah, and expensively.
Yeah, I couldn't afford that book every month.
I know,
but,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I can deal with that type of a book, you know, every 3 months or whatever it comes out.
I get to be Mr. Negative today.
Yes, you have.
Like, let me see who we're talking about, so I can start thinking about bad things to say about him.
You've replaced Mark Beatty, Mister. That guy's overrated.
Hack.
Stop. All right, we got to talk about him at some point, guys. Kevin Smith, and this is a guy that there are film fans that love him. There are film fans that hate him. There are comic fans that think he's the best writer since Stan Lee, and then there are people that just can't stand what he does. I'm going to say that one of my favorite DC series, and I'm a Marvel and indie guy, but one of my favorite DC runs ever was his relaunch of Green Arrow with Phil Hester and Andy Parks.
Yeah,
that was fun. It was well written. It was well conceived. Them's was good comics.
Them's was the good days.
Absolutely.
Good comics.
There are film fans out there, and Tom and I were joking around before the show that...
I know, I'll say it so people can get mad at me. I said that his comics have been better than his movies since Clerks.
Yeah.
Since Clerks, that's what I said. So all you Kevin Smith lovers who enjoy Mallrats,
send your hate mail to
send
Tom
your
Peters.
Hate mail to me,
but
along
with
a plot from Mallrats too. We were talking about
Mallrats. Mallrats is a fun movie. It's a great you said it. It's a great movie of conversations one after the other.
It's nice to quote to other people.
Exactly, but the plot of that movie was so jacked up.
That's we turned into a movie podcast.
You know, I mean, they screened that movie, and the whole opening scene. I mean, if you watch the extras on Mallrats, Kevin Smith's like, "Yeah, we screened it, and the first 20 minutes of the movie flopped, so we took it out, and we basically overdubbed, you know, a 20% of the movie, so it made sense, kind of." It's not a great plot-driven movie. I mean,
about his Daredevil, huh?
I liked his Daredevil.
No, I was just saying that to so
keep me from ranting.
Keep you so we don't get angry, you know, Mallrats. We get a rat in the mail.
No, I really liked Mallrats, but you have to admit that the plot is jacked up.
See, This is weird now because now I'm arguing with you. I don't even like Mallrats, and I'm now arguing with you.
Devil's advocate over here.
Yeah, Mister, I'm going to argue with you.
Well, let's
Matt.
What
do you think?
Let's let our guest talk. Matt, your thoughts on Kevin Smith?
Well, I really like Kevin Smith, and he brought a very interesting outlook in the world into the comics that he did, and I know he loves Daredevil, and it's his favorite character, but I wasn't really a big fan of his work on Daredevil, but I felt that Kevin Smith's personality worked better with Green Arrow, because with Ollie doing his wisecracks and stuff, it just seemed like more of Kevin Smith was able to come out in the character.
Well, that
and I like Mallrats.
I like Mallrats, too, so don't send me hate mail. No. I really enjoyed his Green Arrow because it was a lot of conversation and dialogue. Where his Daredevil run, I liked it. I thought it was a very good run on Daredevil. That was not a talky run. I mean, it was a pretty serious. I don't want to say action. I mean, but there weren't a lot of, you know, hey, what are you guys doing tonight after? All right.
See, he can write better than us. That was our idea.
I like Kevin Smith. I would like to see him set down the movies and say, I'm going to write comics for 4 years. I'm going to do a 4-year run on this book. But he's not going to do that because movies pay a hell of a lot more than comics.
That Clerks 2 train is coming to the station.
Yeah. You know who's you know who drew Clerks, the first Clerks comic adaption?
Kurt Swan?
Oh, it was Phil Hester.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we'll see.
I didn't know. I didn't really think it was Kurt Swan.
We love the Phil Hester. Who did you want to talk about next?
Oh, I was jokingly pointing to Greg Rucka.
Oh, shut up. We'll get to him, and we will kiss his feet later.
Who is the next big person out
there? Matt, this is the guy that was at the top of your list, and I've read Road to Perdition, but it's not a guy that I know a whole lot of his work, but that's Max Allan Collins. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, Max Allan Collins is probably one of the few people that actually really gets no hype about from being outside the world of comics. And the first exposure I had to him was when he was writing Batman right after Crisis on Infinite Earths, and he introduced the new Jason Todd and tied up a lot of those loose ends. But he's a very good crime novelist, and I know I believe he's been writing some episodes of CSI as well as doing some novelizations with those. So if he's in his element, he does very well. And he's a fellow Iowan, so you can't go wrong with that.
Wait, you're from Iowa?
Yes, I am.
That's it. We're stopping.
If we run over, we might just edit out the Max Allan Collins part.
Oh, stop.
I'm kidding.
Stop. Where at in Iowa are you from, Matt?
I'm originally from Waverly, Iowa.
Boo! I don't know where that is. Sorry, Mr. Negative.
Which corner of the state is that from?
That's in the northeast corner.
Northeast corner. So you're up by north of Waterloo.
Yeah, 10 miles north of Waterloo.
Okay, I know. I lived in Newton, Iowa for 6 weeks.
Until work release let you out? Prison joke.
No, and then I lived in Des Moines for like 3 years. It's a real tough time for me to live in Iowa because I was like in my young 20s, and that is not a young 20s type of place to be, so... But
if you're a farming enthusiast.
Yes. But I am deviating. But Iowa City is a hopping good town.
I believe you.
It is a fun place.
Not.
Oh, gosh.
I'm full of it.
That's why I spent 5 years there.
You only spent 5 years in Iowa?
In Iowa City.
Oh, you're a Hawkeye, aren't you?
Yes. I had so much fun there that it took me 5 years to graduate.
Nice. It is a good town. So even though they do put their basketball arenas underground.
I'm Steve Bryant, and you're listening to Around Comics, and Tom Caters is not wearing any pants.
Okay, you got to help me with this name. Javier Grillo
Markswatch.
Markswatch.
So people call him JGM for the
I'm the worst person for this podcast because I butcher everyone's name. Okay, you've got Middleman and Super Skrull, and this is one of the guys on, it's Lost. Everyone that works on Lost works in comics.
Yes.
What is up with that?
Well, Lost is a very episodic and character-driven show, like the comics are. And there, it seems like the Lost is what I would think of to be a comic book set on TV from week to week. And you can tell that there are a lot of fans, that the people on Lost are fans with the Flash comics in the first season, and
who would
Michael
read that crap?
Artist.
No, I'm sorry.
Someone of superior intelligence and handsome, most likely. Handsome,
but not always.
Not necessarily.
No, didn't who? What comic writers have worked on Lost?
Mark Verheiden.
Jeff Loeb is actually one of the plot supervisor, I believe.
Okay. Loeb worked, and we'll get to him. Well, no, I was going to say, we'll get to him later.
Hayden,
screw it, we'll talk about Loeb.
Does Verheiden do Lost, or is he done a different television show?
He does Battlestar.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's doing, what else is, he's done Superman?
He's doing Superman, Batman.
He did some stuff for Smallville. If you guys are interested on, and a couple of the guys, I always talk about Word Balloon because John Sentris does such a great job doing interviews. He did an interview with Verheiden.
Yeah.
And it was great. That guy was awesome. So check out that interview if you have a chance. I've got Damon Lindelof. He's another Lost guy. He's doing Ultimate Hulk versus Ultimate Wolverine, which came out, what, 2 issues, and then
director's cut.
Yeah.
That's
going to be my bitch and moan and gripe on all this is, if you're going to come over from TV or movies,
finish your books.
Put out your goddamn books on time.
I'm looking at you specifically. We already talked about all of them.
Was it what? Heimberg. I know they have commitments that are already set in stone, but Marvel, DC, if you're going to pull these guys over from that side of the entertainment industry, man, put them on a schedule. And if they can't meet it, you know, don't make it an ongoing series. Or if it's going to be a miniseries, I mean, seriously, how long does it take to write a 4-issue miniseries?
I've been working on issue 4 of mine for 8 years now. I'm kidding. I don't have any.
I've never seen the rough cut of that. And it's, you know, it's easy for me to sit here and bitch and moan about it because I don't write.
It is easy for me.
I just sit behind a microphone once a week and drink beer. But Matt, I mean, do you agree with that? It's like, you know, if you're going to sign up to do a 4-issue miniseries, can't you just write the 4-issue miniseries and give it to them and say, here you go, editors, find an artist?
Oh, definitely. Because I know personally that if I'm at work and I don't meet my deadlines, I get in trouble for that. And so I don't see why the editors on these books don't do more to try to get these creators to get their work finished. Like, I know we've mentioned Alan Heidenberg, but Kevin Smith in his Spider-Man Black Cat, it took from, what, September 2002 till just a couple months ago for him to get the series completed.
Yeah, and I think unfortunately for Marvel on that whole thing, which that was a big draw, but that just absolutely destroyed the sales on that book. I don't know what the sales were.
There were fans that died during that time period.
Probably. You know, but, you know, and I may be casting, you know, stones where they don't need to go, but, you know, because it's not always the writer. A lot of the deadline misses are because of the artist. And so on the Ultimate Wolverine, Ultimate Hulk mini, that may be the artist. I don't know. but I just because this guy works in TV.
Because we know his name.
Yeah, because you know his name, you know he's in TV, you automatically go, oh, well, comics aren't important enough to him, so why'd they get him on there anyway? And I really liked the first two issues, by the way.
How about Ultimate Pink Slip? Get fired.
Let's move on here a little bit. You had Daniel Close on there, who, of course, wrote Ghost World. And he was also the screenwriter for Ghost World. I think that's a little bit different because at that point, he's just basically screenwriting for his own work. So,
right.
It's kind of like Frank Miller working on Sin City. I don't know if that – I guess it would count as crossing mediums. But, if you're working on your own work and the adaptions of that into other mediums, I guess, does that count?
No.
Tom says
no, no. Scratch him from the list.
Okay, all right. Daniel Close. Sorry, Frank Miller's off.
Blah blah blah.
All right, we're going to talk about a couple guys that that Tom is going to be very interested in. And I would also say again, if you want to hear more from these guys, check out Word Balloon because John did an interview with these two guys also, and that's Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo. Tom, why don't you talk about these guys? And
they're the guys that are going to be writing The Flash that's coming out next Wednesday. Actually,
is it next Wednesday?
Yeah, I'm psyched for it.
Who is it?
Who else? It's going to be Bart.
It's not Barry West.
Barry West. Yeah, Barry West. Some sort of they changed history. The damn Superboy and his punches against the.
No, but DiDio said it was not Barry Allen.
No,
move
of course
on.
Not. But they also did the Flash television show, mm-hmm. and. Also, I'm looking at the list now. The Rocketeer was the one that I was going to mention.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have worked on The Sentinel, you remember that TV show. And they worked on a lot of very good short-lived shows.
Yeah.
And they work in video games.
That's how you build a cult.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. That's what you want.
Yeah. I worked on this one four-episode TV show. It was really good. They just didn't catch on.
They didn't get it.
Matt, are you a Flash fan?
Yes, I am. Flash was always one of the first characters that I attached to, and I'm really excited because pretty much everything that I'm aware of them that they've done has had at least some superhero hint to it. And from their interview on Word Balloon, it really sounds like they're excited to work on this project.
Oh yeah, they're jacked about it, and I think that's all that we as fans can ask is that you get someone who's talented, and that they're excited about the project. And I would almost take a really excited writer than a really talented one that
jaded.
Doesn't give a shit.
Angry.
Yeah, and they say, yeah, I mean,
John Byrne.
Yeah, no Hemingway. No one Hemingway writing
Scratch.
A comic.
Okay, so we are looking forward to. I'll pick up the Flash because these guys they seem to understand the character and they seem very excited about it. Everyone's favorite Identity Crisis guy, Mr. Meltzer, how you doing? Novelist. I guess we're getting into the novelists now.
Novelists.
Yes. So. Brad Meltzer, I haven't read any, but you'll hear this a lot through the podcast.
I haven't read any
of these guys, big boy books.
I hear
but,
he is a New York Times best-selling author.
I liked Identity Crisis. It's been pointed out before that there's plot holes the size of the Grand Canyon in it and some maybe out of character writing, but I thought it was a very good comic.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a great lead-in to what
everyone else
what
is
DC
wrong.
Was.
Plot holes.
There were some.
That's what fan fiction's for. Write a story, figure
that's
it out.
That's what Slash fiction's for.
That's what Slash, yeah, no. Exactly.
But is that
the Atom didn't just sit on Hawkman's shoulder because they were friends? All right,
stop,
you know? So
stop. You be good, you.
Something weird going on.
Matt, any thoughts on Brad Meltzer before we move on?
I also really enjoyed his Identity Crisis, and I was a fan of his work on Green Arrow also.
His Green Arrow is really good.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to his Justice League that's coming out in a couple months.
Very good.
I haven't read. Sorry.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. I've enjoyed what I've read of his. Here's one, James Robinson, and who's Starman, and he is a screenwriter for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So, James, we're going to mark you off the list, and we're moving
Very
on.
Very good comics writer.
Really bad movie.
Who else? Blah, 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 blah.
Well, okay, one of the last guys I have on the list that I want to talk about. No, I was going to say Greg Rucka, but we'll get to him. Okay.
Yeah.
He writes really good books.
You've read his books.
I really like. I'm going to read a couple forum posts here, and then I want to come back to some comic writers that have jumped over into some other mediums. So, let me see here. We have our good buddy Matt S. And he goes, so I guess I'll throw this out there. Does anyone think these writers have crossed any bridges to non-comic readers? Marvel has really made an effort in this area, but has it been worth it? And he says Marvel has made the attempt. I think it's both companies.
Everyone.
You know, once again, throwing a bouquet to Rucka. He didn't start out at Marvel or DC. He started out Oni. So he came in writing comics for not one of the big two.
It's for real.
Well, yeah, because he's hardcore to the bone.
Yeah, that's how he rolls. No other thoughts on that.
So anyway, guys, do you think it's been worth it for the big two to add these out of medium writers into the fold? Has it raised the level of writing in the industry? Mr. Kramer, why don't you start us off?
I honestly think that it has, because you can see that before the time where these writers were crossing mediums, the story writing across most comics was fairly monotone or pretty average superhero stuff with just a few exceptions. But now with all of these other people coming into the medium, it seems like the new writers have stepped up their game a little bit. I don't know if it's to keep their jobs or if they're just heavily influenced by the people coming in or if it's just a sign of that generation. But I think that over the past 10 years or so, the quality of the writing has really gone up.
Well, it's interesting because you look at really kind of two types of writers. You have guys that are writing TV, the Heinberg, the OC, and all the Lost writers.
Yeah.
You've got the TV writers and you've got the novelist. And it's interesting because TV is so very episodic, because they're TV episodes. And those seem to that style of writing seems to translate very well into the comics medium. Where the novelist, I think it takes those guys a little bit to really get going. One of the things, we talked about Charlie Houston a little bit with Moon Knight, and people were saying, oh my God, this is so incredibly decompressed. And from a comic perspective, it is. I mean, he spent two issues getting out of his wheelchair, basically, and he's not out of the house yet, is the big gripe. But from a novelist standpoint, it's not decompressed. That's how novelists write.
So I would two chapters.
Yeah. It's chapter one, chapter two of a 12-chapter story. And it's just a lot of comic fans are used to seeing, chapter one, chapter two is the first half of a single issue.
You don't have to buy your novels chapter by chapter for like $3, though. You know, that's
Stephen King did it with The Green Mile.
Very true, but I don't like Stephen King.
But you know, do you see that, Matt, that maybe the TV writers have the – I see it with Whedon, that man, he just stepped right in and was able to start writing comics. Do you see that as an easier transition for the TV guys to make?
Definitely, because if they're in TV, they're already writing in the episodic style, as you'd stated.
You know, maybe the novelist should start with a graphic novel first to say, hey, here's my story, and if it's going to be 160 or 240 pages, if that's what it's going to take, then I'm going to write it that way.
They should channel the ghost of Gardner Fox so you can learn your one story. Plot. Forget characters. You have to get them someplace and then do something with them.
Yes.
Halfway in between those. It's great.
Oh, gosh. We have a tome here from Papercut.
Just edit it down.
Yeah, there's a shock. Actually, I'm gonna give this one to Matt or to Tom.
I'm just gonna edit it.
Okay, David Price. If they write a good story, I'm happy. I think I've read more of Neil Gaiman's novels and short stories than any of his comics. However, sometimes that outside of comics comic writer can mean more eyes. And I totally butchered this. The comic writer can mean more eyes will check that comic out.
I wish this was a video podcast. Oh, you would have just seen Chris not being able to read and me looking at his pen right now, like confused because I can't figure out how to make it work.
Okay, we'll pick this one up. He goes, okay, I think it'll be more people checking the comic out. It happened with my wife and Storm. She's an Eric Jerome Dickey fan. Has most, if not all, of his books, but she wanted to read it, and she liked it. So there you have David Price's lovely wife decided to read Storm because the guy writing that is a novelist. So I guess that's one example of Marvel being able to bring in a new writer, even though, you know, that writer had to be, like, married to a uber comic geek to say, look, honey, your guy wrote this.
Look.
You know, do most fans of novelists, do they give one, you know, rat's hair if their guy is writing a comic book?
I don't know too many people that are really, like, obsessive fans of too many novelists.
I mean, if Tom Clancy wrote a book for Marvel or DC, would Tom Clancy fans that read all of his books, would they track down their local comic shop and try and find it?
No, but Dean Koontz fans would in a heartbeat. Or John Grisham. Rainmaker.
And Mark is over our shoulder here, and he said, so would Stephen King fans. So, Mark, and we'll open it up to the peanut gallery here.
No, don't come to the microphone. Just tell us.
It's Stephen King's Dark Tower is going to be adapted to comics. Do you think that is going to bring in Stephen King fans into the shop?
Why, yes. Yes, I do.
Oh, Lord.
No. Just tell.
Yes. Yeah, he says yes.
Yes,
all right.
Yes, I do. No, I do.
Vorpal Keith wants to remind us that Jeff Johns started out in film working as Richard Donner's assistant.
And you know what? David Goyer, who co-wrote JSA, also was one of the screenwriters for Batman Begins and did the first two Blade movies, I believe. But he never gets mentioned anywhere.
Well, that explains why the third Blade movie sucked butt.
I think he also did that, and I tried to sneak that past. He did it. No, I know he did the first two. And
Matt, have you seen Blade 3, Trinity?
No, I have not.
Don't waste
really
your time.
I don't have any desire to see it.
That was a turd.
See the first two, though. They're good.
Yeah, the first. I actually, you know, most people like the first one. I thought the second one was great.
I think
it's like the second time we've talked about this.
I know,
on the podcast.
2 weeks. God, Christ. If you search for Blade fans, we're going to show up.
The third movie was a turd. Period.
Turd.
It was a turd.
We're going for non explicit tag.
Yes.
Okay,
for once. 4 weeks in a row.
All right, then.
All right, Wet Rats, our haiku expert, which we'll get to later, says that Joss Whedon has been the real prize of the outside writers movement. He, like Kevin Smith, clearly grew up reading comics and understands the way to tell a story in the comic book form. Certain others, Orson Scott Card, though fine writers, just don't seem to have the instinctive feel of the rhythm of comic books. So, did you guys read the Ultimate Iron Man mini?
No.
I read it, and I'm gonna ask Mark again here. Mark, was number 5 supposed to be the end of that series?
I was under the assumption that it was number 6, but it just seemed to end with 5.
It just ended with five.
That's meta. Because
it felt like it was supposed to go on.
It's yeah. meta.
I was like, I put down number five, and I was like, oh, okay, can't wait to see how they wrap it up in
nope,
number
done.
Six.
Done.
And I'm just like, oh, when's Ultimate Iron Man 6 come out? And Mark's like, it's all done. I was like, well, what do you mean it's all done? So, I yeah. Yeah, and the trade is out. So apparently there are plans, and once again we're getting into deadlines here. We reported last week that Orson Scott Card is signed up to do Ultimate Iron Man Volume 2, and he has two of the five issues written now. And, okay, I'm not demeaning the writing craft. It's what I love about comics, but how long does it take to write three issues of a comic? You're not drawing them. You're
it's
writing
three
it.
Issues of Iron Man.
Dude, it's plotted. Write it. Write it. Dude, you couldn't start writing five issues without having to have a plot from what's going to happen from issue one to issue five. And it's like, well, we got to look at Orson's schedule because we don't know when he's going to be able to get around to those last three issues. It's like, send the motherfucker a box of no-dos and tell him to get you three issues
all
by
right,
next
we're,
Tuesday.
We're going explicit.
I'm sorry. I'm ranting. Arr, okay.
Blue. Going blue. Working blue.
Espresso Dom is one of our favorite listeners. Everyone who posts on the forum is one
yeah,
of our favorite
every,
listeners.
And any listener's a favorite listener.
No, Dom is a really we go back and forth on the forums. He's a really good guy. I totally agree that
as far as we know.
That Joss Whedon is the gem of that bunch. I'm not sure how successful a writer Greg Rucka was before comics, but he is definitely a great writer. I think if the second-tier writers grasp onto the comic medium, they would be able to tell their stories in a way they never imagined possible. I think that J. Michael Straczynski trying to retell every story ever told in his own way bothers me. So there you go. We got three guys. We got Joss Whedon, we got Greg Rucka, we got J. Michael Straczynski. Matt, who is your favorite of those three?
Oh, Joss Whedon, without a doubt.
Okay, Tom?
What were those three again?
Whedon, Smith, and Straczynski. Those are probably the three, or no, it was Whedon, Rucka, Straczynski. And we'll add Kevin Smith in there. Does that change your
vote,
Matt?
Yeah, I would obviously pick Smith.
Not at all.
Okay,
Smith.
Tom?
Smith, easy.
Okay, obviously my favorite one is Rucka. But Whedon would be my second pick, followed by, so it'd be Whedon, Rucka, Whedon,
whoever.
No, I tell you
mine's
what.
Mine's Smith, the rest are just turd burglars.
You know, I tell you, Straczynski is such an interesting guy to talk to. Or talk about with this subject, because you know the first half of Rising Stars was great. The second half was not so great. Midnight Nation is one of my favorite miniseries of all time. His Amazing Spider-Man work has been amazing and not so amazing. But then you look at
not spectacular
either. But you look at Squadron Supreme, and before that Supreme Power. That is a great series. Do you read that, Matt?
No, I have not. The only stuff from J. Michael Straczynski that I've really read was some of his Fantastic Four and the work he did in The Other.
What do you think about his run on Fantastic Four?
I like it so far. It's your basic Fantastic Four story, and I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people don't like it, but I don't really know why.
Mark is here. Mark, you come over. Get your little microphone time. And Mark, this is Mark. This
microphone.
Is Mark. We've renamed him Mark. That guy is overrated, Beatty. So here you go, Mark.
It's mediocre. I'm gonna have to slide it over. It's mediocre stuff. It's not that fantastic. There's nothing exciting about it. There have been much better runs, including John Byrne's, Jack. I mean, the original stuff is much better. He's not doing anything new. Mark Waid, I couldn't tell the difference between his and Mark Waid stuff. Literally.
Okay. Well, there you go. It's I've heard a lot of people say that his Fantastic Four run is so-so, but... And I liked his Spider-Man to begin with, and I think the last three issues have been very good. But it's his limited series and the stuff that's out of the hardcore mainstream that I really like. If you haven't read Midnight Nation, check it out. And Supreme Power, and now Squadron Supreme is one of my favorite monthlies.
Do yourself a favor. Read them.
Tom's on lewds tonight.
It's hot. It's hot in here.
All right. Have we talked about most of the major guys? Is there anyone else that you have you stolen the list? You got the list over
no,
there?
No, I don't. Oh, I have paper cuts.
Okay. Paper cuts post has been edited down. Go ahead, Tom.
So here's some thoughts. Big names mean big buzz. Oh, wait, these are pros. I'm sorry. Here are some thoughts on the pros and cons. Pros, big names mean big buzz. They may draw more potential readers. Each MTL, which means movie, TV, literary talent, mm-hmm. hopefully brings fresh ideas and a fresh way to tell them.
He was making up acronyms for you.
I can tell. Generally speaking, the people that are asked to write a book for the big two are generally well-known because they're successful and good at what they do. And today's best comic writers first made their mark outside the industry. And then he lists all the people we've talked about.
Yeah.
And I don't have the cons, but I'm going to assume it's because they're all drug addicts. Hollywood people. They come with their liberal ideas and their loose women.
Okay.
And this section's rapidly closing.
Okay. Matt, are there any other specific creators that you'd like to mention before we move on to some final thoughts?
No.
No, I think we've hit on pretty much all the big guys.
Except.
Oh, I was going to just mention Alex Toth quick, because he did a lot of Silver Age books and then also designed a lot of animation work that we still watch today.
Alex Toth, never heard of him.
Alex Toth? High five!
We had the pronunciation police crack down on us and send us like a whole pronunciation thread. But
sorry to call you out on that, Matt.
Yeah, it's Toth.
You truly lost the contest.
No, you're that's a guy that worked in so many mediums that'll make your head spin. But yeah, with the animation and his work in Silver Age, absolutely. And I guess that's like an old school media crossover guy.
Yeah. So.
And definitely worth recognition.
We didn't even talk about Neil Adams. He's crossing over into crazy philosophies.
Really?
You know his stuff about the Earth, that crazy stuff. That's off topic.
See with Darren Dalton?
That's off topic. We'll save that for another podcast.
A guy I do want to mention is Jeff Darrow. Tom or Matt? You know Jeff Darrow? Familiar with his work?
I saw him listed with all the things he did, and I am.
Matt, are you familiar with his work?
I'm not really that familiar with he's done. I know he's I've seen some of his work, but I can't really.
He did Hard Boiled. He just recently did the cover for The Last Christmas.
Yes.
Shaolin Cowboy.
Okay.
Yeah. If you pick up Shaolin Cowboy, that's Darrow's work. And he is the guy that he was basically the art director for The Matrix.
Shaolin Cowboy. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, I think that we've touched on a few of them. God, Sal, we miss you. He just keeps cracking the whip on us and moving us along.
Yeah.
So.
This is done. This is over.
Yeah. Okay. Final thoughts. We're going to let our guest of honor start us off here. Mr. Kramer. What are your final thoughts on cross-media creators?
Well, I think that it's a good thing to bring new life into the world of comics and get new ideas in there, but I don't want to see it happen at the expense of creators who are currently working, and I want to see these books come out on time. That's the big thing.
Get your crap in and get it out. That's what we're saying.
I want my final thought is to stay where you are. Don't write comic books. Keep doing movies.
Tom.
Just stay. Yeah. Who needs you, Mr. Late Books, with your crazy ideas about how things should be done? Except for Kevin Smith. I like Kevin Smith. So Joss Whedon's all right, and most of the people we talked about. All right.
Everyone else, stay put.
Stay, yeah. You know, Jay Bruckheimer, don't get in the comics.
Oh, that would be scary.
Oh, Bad Boys, the comic book.
Oh God.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm right there with you guys. I think it I think it is a good thing. I enjoy seeing guys like Whedon and Kevin Smith and, you know, obviously Brucka and Hydor and all these guys coming over, because I think that they have a lot to offer to a medium that needs to be refreshed from time to time. And the comics medium is being refreshed right now. I think this is a great time to be a reader, and I think that a lot of that is because they have some really established talent that is still fresh to comics coming in and writing. That is a good thing. The bad thing is deadlines. This is just like an episode on TV. You know, you expect that show to be there every week, and you know when it's not going to be, you know, most of the time. It's the same thing with comics. You know, I expect a book to come out every month unless it states otherwise. So the big con for me is guys that get pulled away from writing comics to go off and do what their primary job is. And is it their fault? Is it the publisher's fault? Is it our fault as fans to expect that? But I'm liking what's going on with Moon Knight. I'm on that side of the fence, and Charlie Houston has basically said that he's on for 12 issues, but he has to write novels because that's what brings home the bacon. So while I do enjoy these guys writing, I wish that they could just make their deadlines. It's amazed me that Straczynski has been writing as many, you know, monthly titles as he does and keeping up with them.
Well, a lot of these guys are doctors too. I think we forgot to mention that. Straczynski's midwife. Made that up. It's made up.
The hell are you talking about?
That's
about
why they're all late all the time. Orson Scott Card is a minister for the Unitarians.
I was joking about the lewds, but I'm not for sure anymore, man.
I'm just trying to liven it up a little bit.
All right. So that's the final thoughts. It's Matt, I want to thank you for bringing up the topic. I hope that our conversation wasn't as entertaining as I thought it was going to be when I read it. It's a great topic, so thank you very much, and thank you for being such a good listener and fan of the show and contributor, and we always look forward to your input. So that's going to wrap up our topic today, and it's time to move over to the news desk. There it is. Okay, get
run
up, Tom.
Over there.
Let's go over there. It's time for Wire to Wire News.
Top headlines for the week of June 12th, 2006. Stagger Lee is getting a lot of praise from creators and critics alike. Derek McCulloch and Shepard Hendrix's historical fiction graphic novel has been receiving heaps of advanced praise from a wide variety of sources. Stagger Lee tells a forgotten story from St. Louis's history, how a small-time criminal became the hero of 100 songs by everyone from blues pioneers like Mississippi John Hurt and Fury Lewis to contemporary rock icons like Nick Cave and Beck. Like John Henry, Johnny Appleseed, or Paul Bunyan, Stagger Lee is a character of American folklore whose story evolved through oral transmission and a transformation of the news of the daily into a larger-than-life myth. Stagger Lee is a 232-page black-and-white graphic novel published by Image Comics, retailing for $17.99, and it is on sale now. Just because they look super in tights doesn't mean that some heroes don't have super brains too. Business Week recently took the opportunity to write on their choices for the top 10 smartest heroes. Here's their list: Reed Richards, Bruce Wayne, Tony Stark, Henry Pym, Hank McCoy, Bruce Banner, Barbara Gordon, Peter Parker, Charles Xavier, and Ray Palmer. Let the debates begin. Image Comics has announced that following a lengthy delay, B. Clay Moore and Steve Griffin's Hawaiian Dick, The Last Resort miniseries, will finally conclude this July. Hawaiian Dick, The Last Resort number 4, is completely finished, said Image Comics executive director Eric Stevenson. This series has been subject to numerous delays since it was first announced, and we've received an unbelievable number of emails and phone calls about this book, so I'm truly pleased that the last issue is finally done. Originally scheduled for a 2003 release before being pushed back to 2004, the first three issues of Hawaiian Dick, The Last Resort, garnered rave reviews from readers and reviewers alike and is currently being developed as a major motion picture by New Line Cinema. Hawaiian Dick, The Last Resort number 4 is available for order now and will go on sale on July 12th. Villard Books, a Random House publishing division, will be publishing the highly acclaimed Elk's Run comic series in a collected graphic novel. The 8-issue Harvey-nominated miniseries never saw completion due to the bankruptcy of the book's publisher, Speakeasy Comics, in late 2005. The turbulent publishing history has not affected the praise that this series continues to garner, with write-ups in publications like Entertainment Weekly, Variety, and a host of comic book-related websites. The series continues to gain buzz, capping it all off with 7 Harvey nominations, including Best Writer, Best Artist, Best Limited Series, Best Letterer, Best Cover Artist, Best New Talent, and Best Single Issue. Quite an accomplishment for a book that hasn't been published since 2005. There's no official release date for the collected graphic novel by Villard Books, but for more information about Elk's Run and its creators, visit AroundComics.com. With Comic-Con International just around the corner, Oni Press is pleased to announce that it is once again giving artists an opportunity to show off their skills. In order to have your portfolio reviewed by an Oni Press editor at Comic-Con, you will need to illustrate one or more of 3 Oni-supplied scripts. Illustrating one of these stories and following the guidelines guarantees you an appointment time to meet with an Oni editor at Comic-Con during the convention's posted hours. Not attending Comic-Con? While Oni does not usually accept unsolicited submissions, this is a special event and non-attending artists can submit their packet as long as they follow the talent search guidelines. For more information on the talent search, visit AroundComics.com. The worlds of film, television, comedy, and comics collide in a new 3-issue Goon anthology series. A few of the more notable names in comedic film and television joined forces with comics' best and brightest to bring you a hilarious new perspective on the world of Eric Powell's The Goon in a new 3-part black and white anthology. In the first issue, humor expert Patton Oswalt of Comedy Central's Comedians of Comedy and Mr. Show scribes a short story of Goon's sidekick Frankie, while legendary artist Mike Ploog provides the art. Other upcoming creators include Brian Pashon, Tony Moore, Hilary Barda, Arvid Nelson, Guy Davis, Thomas Lennon, Tom Snegorski, Mark Farmer, Roger Language, and more. The first issue of The Goon Noir arrives on September 20th. Will it be love or rock and roll suicide? Find out in Sloth, a surrealistic, romantic drama in the spirit of David Lynch that takes the art of sequential storytelling to new heights in its use of light and shadow. From Gilbert Hernandez, the award-winning co-creator of Love and Rockets, the series that defined alternative comics, comes Sloth, Hernandez's first original graphic novel, presented in breathtaking black and white by Vertigo. Troubled teenager Miguel Serra becomes a walking urban legend after he wills himself into a coma and wakes up a year later, virtually unchanged, except for his sloth-like pace. Discover how a haunted woman orchard, a mysterious goat man, and a murder collide as Miguel, his girlfriend Lita, and their friend Romeo take on the teenage wasteland of suburbia. Sloth is on sale July 5th. Panda Express creators go noir. There are a million stories in the Naked City, and they always start with a dame. So it is with Sam Noir, Samurai Detective. created by Manny Tremblay and Eric A. Anderson, popular creators of the online mega hit Panda Express, Sam Noir Samurai Detective mixes classic gumshoe fiction with the samurai Bushido code and a heavy dose of off-kilter humor to create something unique in comics. Sam Noir Samurai Detective debuts in September with a $2.99 price tag from Image Comics / Shadowline. Dead at 17 ongoing series announced. The dead are rising, evil is spreading, and the citizens of Darlington Hills are about to face their greatest trial yet, which means it's time to sit back and enjoy the ride. The critically acclaimed and fan favorite series will get the monthly treatment beginning this summer. Viper Comics has announced that they will release the Dead at 17 ongoing series beginning with issue 1 this August. Written and drawn by original creator Josh Howard, the series will introduce an entire new cast of characters, though the action will continue to take place within the Dead at 17 universe and more specifically Darlington Hills, the home of the original axe-wielding heroine Nara Kilde. For more information on Dead at 17, visit www.vipercomics.com. These have been your top headlines for the week of June 12th, 2006. For the full version of these and other stories, please visit www.aroundcomics.com, your source for the best in comics news, reviews, and opinions.
And those are your top headlines for the last week. Guys, let's go ahead and start at the top. Stagger Lee is a new graphic novel that is coming out from Image. And me personally, I'm kind of excited about this because it has some history from St. Louis, which was originally my home city. So historical St. Louis is very interesting. So this is something I'm looking forward to. Does this sound like a book that interests either one of you? We'll start off. Matt, are you going to check this out?
Yeah, I'm going to try and check this out because I like the historical fiction. I want to check out Five Fish of Science and stuff like that. And from what I know about Stagger Lee, it's an interesting story, but I just want to see what this untold story is.
Well, you know, Five Fists of Science wasn't actually fictional. All of that really happened.
Right.
Wink.
Love that book. It's and not just because Matt was kind enough to be on the show, but Five Fists of Science was a lot of fun. But I think that Stagger Lee is going to be a lot more grounded in actual historical fact. So any character that inspires blues songs, I'm all on board with. So. Business Week released their top 10 smartest heroes in comics, and mentioned it in the story. It was Reed Richards, Bruce Wayne, Tony Stark, Hank Pym, Hank McCoy, Bruce Banner, Barbara Gordon, Peter Parker, Charles Xavier, and Ray Palmer. Does this seem like a pretty accurate list to you guys?
I know Peter Parker's supposed to be pretty clever. But would you say he's like...
Well, he always gets brought up as like, you know, the prodigy scientist, you know, star... You know, but... Okay.
Why is he poor all the time?
Is Barbara... Because he's a school teacher, and school teachers are poor.
Yeah. Well, he's not that smart, then.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I may just be out of touch with the character, because I don't read Birds of Prey. Shame on me. But is Barbara Gordon really that smart?
Yeah, I guess.
Matt, do you...
Yeah.
She's that smart?
I'm not really familiar with her in the Oracle role, but from what I've seen, she seems to be smart, but I don't know if she's one of the 10 smartest when they leave out someone like Brainiac 5, who's smarter than the entire Earth.
Yeah, you know, they left out the villains. These are all the heroes, because I'm like...
Brainiac's a hero. Brainiac 5 is.
Oh, Brainiac
from
5.
Superhero.
I'm thinking of the robot. So
no, it's the
I'm going to take my Marvel ass and just
go
crawl over in the corner over there.
Brainiac.
No, okay, that Brainiac. Yeah. It's because if you throw in villains, it's like, you know, come on, man, Doom.
Yeah.
And the leader. And,
or Dr. was Magnus or Magus who invented the Metal Men. I mean, he's smarter than Peter Parker. Or even the shrinking guys. What do they have with Henry Pym and Ray Palmer that they think shrinking is so, like, awesome that it's, you know?
Hey.
Or Giant Man, I guess.
Hey.
Yellow Jacket.
Hank Pym, he invented particles.
He's also a wife beater. Also a wife beater.
No, I have no problem with either of the Hanks, Pym or McCoy. But I don't know. It's as far as like really smart superheroes. I'm trying to think of some of the others, but it was the Barbara Gordon that, you know, it's like, yeah, she like can surf the internet really good.
It's hard to do. I bet she could get this.
Yeah, I bet she could be a hell of a lot better producer
yeah,
of the
producing show,
the show
than
sure.
you.
All right, so a little debate going on the smartest superheroes of all time. It's we'll throw it up on the. Actually, there already is a thread.
Yeah,
before.
We already. I said what I said on there.
Okay.
Already.
So you're repeating yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the listeners.
We talked about books being late a little bit earlier in the show, and here's one that is so late. But a really good series, and that's Hawaiian Dick, and that's by B. Clay Moore. And it's actually been optioned for a movie, but have you read Hawaiian Dick?
No, I have not.
Matt, have you checked
no.
that out? It's a really
No,
good,
I haven't.
It is a really good series. So
Because it's late? Is that what
not
like
not
that?
Because it's late. It's just a fun series. B. Clay Moore is one of my, you know, we didn't bring him up last week in the underrated writers, but if you've read Battle Hymn, that is a really good series, and I think he is an underrated writer. So I'm hoping that that The Last Resort, when it comes out, that it comes out to pretty good sales and people enjoy it. So be on the lookout for that. Elk's Run. I had to put this story in here because it's our weekly story about a former speakeasy book.
We should come up with a little bumper for that.
Yeah, it's like, here is your speakeasy abandoned
speakeasy,
book for the week.
Speakeasy going hard or something.
Going,
that sounds dirty. I'm sorry.
You are just trying
it's the
to
heat.
Get, you're trying to get our explicit tag. You're
Mississippi
not going to let
heat.
Us get out of this. Matt, did you ever have a chance to check out Elk's Run?
No, I didn't. I've always heard really good things about it, but I could never find any copies of it at my shop. So I'm hoping to pick it up when the trade is released.
Well, I think, obviously the Harvey people thought it was pretty good because they gave it 8 nominations.
8?
Yeah, for a book.
Wait.
That, yeah, it's basically
is
everything. It was... Oh no,
seven. Fact checkers just got
yeah.
back. To
okay, it must suck then. Best writer, best artist, best limited series, best. Letter.
I got 4, not Harvey nominations.
Did not get 4 Harvey nominations. Shut up. So they're gonna release the entire miniseries as a trade, and so the whole fallout from the speakeasy thing is that now I think there are a couple series that it's like. Yeah, you know, or Ricketto is another one from Dark Horse or Image to Dark Horse. Where's it going to? No,
it's Image.
Oh, Speakeasy.
It went from Speakeasy to Image.
Speakeasy to Image. And so they released like 6 or 4 of the first 6, and now they're going to collect
5
it.
Of the or 4.
Whatever.
Fact checkers,
help us out. But but the only way that you can get those the last 2 in that arc are to buy the trade. So the people that bought the single issues now are forced to go back and buy the trades. And this is something that has happened with a lot of the speakeasy books. So that's darn it.
Gosh darn it.
Oh well,
life goes on.
Anyone out there that is an aspiring comic book artist, Oni Press is going to give you not just an opportunity, but a guarantee to get in front of their editors and show your artistic muscles off. So I really had to edit this story down quite a bit and take out a lot of the specifics. So basically what Oni has done is that they have three scripts that they've made available online, and you can do any one, two, or three of the scripts and basically enter and schedule a time to meet with their editors in San Diego. So if you're an artist, this is the chance to go show your stuff to Oni. And
good luck.
Yeah, and God bless.
God bless you. We'll be complaining about you being late. Yeah, eventually.
Can you imagine like Marvel or DC doing a promotion like this? It's like, you know, here's a Brian Michael Bendis script, and you know, pencil it out and come talk to us. So
no, I can't. I cannot. That would be.
You know, they do have folks there for portfolio reviews, but yeah. It's kind of neat that Oni set out, you know, scripts to say, okay, now we can get apples to apples and say, okay, this is the idea, and this is like a script that we would send you. So check that out.
Do it.
The Goon is going to have a 3-issue little anthology put out there that's not going to be written by Eric Powell or drawn by Eric pretty good list of creators working on this, though. You know, I'm looking up, you know, Guy Davis, Tony Moore, those are
Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, I mean, on the writing side, you know, you're looking at Pashan and oh gosh, who else is
Tony
on
Tony Moore.
Yeah, well, Moore's right. So that's you know, so fans of the Goon, a nice little twist on that character. That's be worth checking out.
Get it.
Yeah.
Get it.
You're telling people what to buy again, Tom.
I'm telling them, I didn't say buy, steal. Steal it, but not from this shop. Not from this shop.
But not from Dark Tower.
Not from, buy two at Dark Tower and steal one
that's
from the steal one from the competition.
Matt, are you a fan of the Goon?
I have read a few issues of it, but I've never really been able to get into it.
It's fun.
But I might give this a shot because I like some of these.
You don't
creators.
Like fun, Matt? Is that the problem? You don't like fun? I'm kidding.
No, not
I'm sure
at
you
all.
Do.
I just like watching people's heads get punched
I'm looking at a Bluetooth microphone saying, well, you're not into fun. I'm so glad we don't actually have people watching us do this, because we'd look like...
Oh, it's ridiculous.
We'd look so stupid.
It is ridiculous.
No video
we
podcast
have, We do
us.
Have people that come into the shop and watch us, and they're like, what the hell
are Who are those
doing?
Guys?
Like crazy bastards. The Goon is a fun series. And stop badgering the guest, Tom. Good Lord. Accusing the man of not having fun.
You won the contest. Now it's time to get in the ring.
Yep. You stepped up to the plate. I hope you're ready, man.
Once you enter the octagon, there are no friends.
To enter.
To
only
win,
one leaves.
Or both of us will. I mean.
All right.
Don't ruin the illusion for the fans.
Hernandez Brothers goodness, or actually Hernandez Brother goodness, if you're a fan of...
Bro.
Of Love and Rockets, Gilbert Hernandez is doing his very first standalone graphic novel called The Sloth, and it's coming out July 5th. I know that Sal. This is where we miss Sal on the show, because he is a huge Hernandez Brothers fan, and he'll be all over this. So I'm planning on letting him buy it, and I'll check it
catch
out.
Catch the sloth while you can. Oh, God. I've been thinking about that since I saw the news.
Yeah,
it's gonna yesterday.
That one's been formulated.
Fit it in.
We'll ask Matt. Are you a Love and Rockets fan, or are you looking forward to the new Gilbert Hernandez work?
I've never read an issue of Love and Rockets, but this looks like something that I'd be interested in checking out.
Matt, do you read comics?
yes, I do.
Yes.
None of the ones that come up this week.
None of the ones that come up
are,
in this show.
To be fair, last week we did the wrap-up from Wizard World Philadelphia, and it was just like one mainstream story after another. It was like 10 minutes of, you know, basically talking about Spider-Man, Superman, and you know, Wonder Girl,
We
whatever.
Purposely picked... We don't read any of these either, to be honest.
Oh,
we just,
gosh, yes, I do.
We just we research them all.
This week,
I'm kidding.
This week's news, because we were so slanted towards the big two last week, a lot of the other stories that we didn't run, I bumped up and went with a lot of our independent and alternative press comics, which deserve news and they deserve to be talked about. But it's a lot of stuff that, you know, that maybe
we don't know a lot about.
No, it ain't Infinite Crisis and it ain't Civil War. So
it ain't not.
Let's talk about the another one that absolutely everyone's going to read, and that is the new one from the Panda Express creators, Sam Noir Samurai Detective.
I'll get it. I like samurais. I like detectives.
This has Tom Caters written all over it.
Yeah.
Sam.
I enjoy Panda Express.
It's got two of our favorite words, noir and
noir.
Samurai.
Yeah, samurai and anything with noir. Noir.
Matt, did this grab you at all whenever you read about it?
The first thing that I thought is, when did the mall fast food chain start putting out comics?
Panda Express. Dunkin' Donuts Comics presents Monkey Ninja.
We talked about webcomics last week, so these are some guys that are crossing over from the webcomics world, so check out their stuff at pandaxpress.com. So, I'm Sam Noir, Samurai Detective. I don't care if it sucks. I'm buying it, man. That's with a name like that.
Sold.
That's got to be one of the best comic book names I've seen in years. Our last story of the week is Dead at 17 is going to be an ongoing series. That is a series that just absolutely blew up.
It
came out with little fanfare, and it's just one of those books that started, you know, getting more buzz and critical.
Snowballs fun. Just growing, man. Whatever that is. It's so hot. It's so hot in here.
I'm gonna hang Matt up one more time. Matt, do you read Dead at 17?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you like it?
Yes, I do. I've read all four of the miniseries that have come out so far. Haven't read any of the rough cut stuff, but I'm really looking forward to this one.
Oh, tell us a little bit about Dead at 17, just so we know that you're not lying.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit.
So it's your basic zombie story, but it's as much about zombies as Buffy the Vampire Slayer is about vampires. It's really just about the interaction between all of the main characters and digging up the history behind them. And basically what happens is, in the first issue, the main character dies, and then...
No, you just
somehow
ruined it for me, man.
Jesus.
I'm not picking
Christ.
That up now. Thanks,
and let
Matt.
Me guess, they bring him back from the dead.
3 years.
Jesus.
I'm joking. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
But she dies, and then she comes back to life, and it's basically her job to hunt down zombies and stop them from taking over the world.
All right, so that's Nara killed it. What was that, Mark?
Crow and Buffy slapped together is what Mark said.
I have headphones on. I can't hear things.
I hear everything.
All right, well, guys, I'm going to pick up the Dead at 17. Mark, are those out in trades?
Yes, they are.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Our guest says yes as well.
All right. That's why I have you guys around.
Three of the four binnies are at least.
I'm all over it.
Yeah. Like white on race.
Exactly. Okay.
Next story. Go.
No, that's
no
it.
More. Okay.
That's it.
No
okay.
More stories.
That's
end of the story.
Oh yeah, that's by Viper Comics, by the way. So good for Viper to have such a darn fine book. And Viper puts out some neat stuff. I'm looking for that Emily Edison that came out from Free Comic Book Day. Matt, you did the whole Free Comic Book Day. Did you get the Viper Comics Presents anthology?
Yes, I did.
Some good stuff in there. My crap ass comic store didn't carry that one.
I got four of them. We got four copies.
Mark gave you four copies.
Yeah, I threw them all away. I didn't even read them.
Chris has been asking.
Chris
is
yeah, he's an ass and take
them. Matt, one of the favorite stories I hear from you on the forum talking about comic shops is you always talk about this tragically hip comic shop up in your neck of the woods.
Oh yes.
What? Tell us a little bit, because people should hear about this totally. A lot of people complain about your mainstream comic shops that all they carry is Marvel and DC, but Matt has the other end of the spectrum. What's this shop about?
Well, the shop that I go to, it has four locations around Milwaukee, but the one I go to is on the east side, which is where the college is, and it's where all of the 20-somethings just out of college live, and they pretend they're British and all of that. And basically,
Hipsters.
They order every single indie comic book known to man, but if you don't get there by 3 o'clock on Wednesday, they will all be gone.
That is so bizarre.
Yeah, it's so weird. But you're saying you couldn't find Exterminators at your shop.
That's right. It's
your
been
shop
sold out every issue.
For a book that's only selling 11,000, that's amazing.
It's like 9,000 of them are being
9,000
sold.
9,000 are in Milwaukee.
Well, really. It's like reorder people. Matt, did you ever get those copies of Exterminators?
I actually picked up 5 and 6, but I haven't got around to reading them yet.
Do you have 1 through 4?
No, I don't. I'm going to pick up the trade.
More people need to buy that book, so I may just get the 4 issues and send them up to you. I got your address now.
All right.
Only maybe,
though. Only maybe. Depends on how the top of the stack goes.
Yeah, it depends on how entertaining you are for the rest
of
the show.
So.
No pressure. All right. Hey, speaking of, let's go ahead and wrap up the news, and let's move away from the news desk. Come on over here, Tom. Come on.
It's tiny over here. The chair's uncomfortable.
Grab your mic. All right. Come on, Matt. All right. Okay. Yes.
It's windy.
Now we're back at the main desk.
Yeah.
It's time for Top of the Stack. That's right, it's time for Top of the Stack, our chance to let you, the listener, know what our panel has been reading for the last week. Mr. Kramer, what is your Top of the Stack this week?
Well, my Top of the Stack is Tricked by Alex Robinson. It's a 350-page black-and-white graphic novel. So it's a little different from the format, but this is the best thing I've read in a long time. It's 350 pages, and I read it in 2 sittings. It's basically about 6 people who are completely unrelated, but then over the course of the story, their plots start to get intertwined more and more, and then they're all brought together at the end. And the end is just one of the weirdest things I have ever read in comics history. The last page is basically a close-up of a character's eye with images swirling around it for about 10 pages.
Now, that was put out by Marvel, right?
It was put out by Top Show.
I'm joking. That wasn't put out by Marvel. I've actually read Tricked. It was... Our buddies over at Indie Spinner Rack, Charlito and Mr. Phil, that was one of their top 5 books from 2005. And it's one of Alex Robinson's other works, Box Office Poison. Yeah. Very good. Very good.
I've heard very good things.
Have you, Matt, read Box Office Poison?
I have not because the $30 price tag puts me off a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah,
but I mean, this is a guy, Alex Robinson did this, and it took him like 4 years to do. He wrote and drew Tricked, and Top Shelf puts out some fantastic books.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, but it was like 4 years he worked on this, and I keep talking about other podcasts today, like Word Balloon. The Mocha Festival was a couple weekends ago.
Yeah,
and
I think two weekends ago.
And Indie Spinner Rack has been putting out, I think they put out the 3rd of 6 1-hour episodes.
I thought they only did 2 so far.
No, they put out the third one.
I think it's 8, though. I think it's like 7
it's,
or 8
it's
of
eight
them.
Part,
yeah.
Well, they went to they were the official podcast of Mocha, and deservedly so, because Indie Spinner Rack kicks ass.
They do awesome. You don't even have to... there's a tendency, I think, for people to listen to podcasts, they like to listen to stuff they already know about.
Yeah.
And they do a really good job of, in a genre where you're probably not going to know what they're talking about most of the time, you're not going to know the books they're talking about, they do a really good job of making it interesting and making you want to seek out those books.
That's why I listen to them. Every episode, and Charlie, Phil, I'm talking to you guys, you cost me money every episode.
Yeah.
The first
me too.
did you listen to the first interview episode from Mocha this week, Matt?
I haven't got around to it yet because I'm still backed up on podcasts from when my iPod crashed about a month ago.
Oh, it's because of all those two-hour podcasts that come out, bastards.
All of those long...
Stop it.
Podcast.
But they talked to the guy that does this book called Action Philosophers.
Oh, yeah.
And after the episode, I ran right to I was like, okay, as I'm listening to the episode, I'm opening up Amazon and, not there. So I go to their website and I'll talk about it next week. It should come in the mail. But I order things as I'm listening to Indie Spinner Rack. But that's where I heard about Tricked, and it is a really phenomenal piece of work. So Matt, we'll let you live.
You'll get those issues,
thank
I guess.
You, thank you.
Yeah, Exterminators 1-4 is on its way up.
All right. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Hey.
Yes, and everyone out there, buy Exterminators. Amazing book. Tom, what is your top of the stack?
My top of the stack is the first issue of Heroes Squared, the new ongoing series by Keith Giffen, Jim DeMatteis, and drawn by Joe Abraham. It is based on a sort of parallel worlds type joke where a normal sort of everyday schlub, finds out that in an alternate world, his counterpart is like Captain Marvel pretty much. But
wait, which one, Marvel or DC?
DC, the real one. Sorry about that. But the main joke of it is that the superhero, I think it's, now I'm drawing a blank, Captain Valor, I believe, his arch enemy is his ex-girlfriend, but on the main Earth, Milo, the main character, is still dating that girl. What ends up happening is Valor and his ex-girlfriend end up destroying their universe and coming sort of to ours, and Milo sleeps with his girlfriend from an alternate world. And it's funnier and less confusing than my rambling description that I just gave.
Sounds
effed up. So, yeah, it's pretty weird, and it's really funny because I think sometimes with the whole Giffen DeMatteis, like, bwahaha books, people have a tendency to forget that they actually have really, really good dialogue. And
better than bwahaha.
Better than bwah. Like, it's more than just sort of joke. It's jokey, but it's also clever. And you get your money's worth. You're not going to read that book in, like, 5 minutes. If you like dialogue and you like humor and you like alternate universe stories, and if you're curious about whether or not your girlfriend would be pissed if you slept with a different version of her from an alternate world, the answer is probably yes. And it's a really good book.
You
so
think?
You'll learn a lesson, you'll have a laugh.
Were there any monkeys in it?
No.
Tom, did you see the latest iTunes review?
No, I didn't.
Titled, Around Comics is the best comics podcast with monkeys.
See, now I feel this pressure that anytime I see a monkey in a comic book, I need to like make it my top of the stack. I was reading Terra Obscura and I kind of complained because I thought it was really boring.
Uh-huh.
I'm sort of embarrassed to say that the last two issues of the first trade were really actually made it way better because they introduced a character called the Ape, who's sort of a talking ape, and it's hilarious. He's wearing like a space suit and He celebrates, he finally gets his own trading card where it just says the ape on it because he joins their... Anyway, get Heroes Squared. Great book. Sorry, I'm diverting from the main topic. And by Exterminators.
And by Exterminators. All right, guys. My top of the stack is Night Wolf number 0. This is brought to us by the fine people right around the corner from us at Devil's Due Publishing. It is written by Stephen L. Antczak. It's A-N-T-C-Z-A-K.
You can never just pick a book by someone named
Smith.
Smith or Johnson. Good. Where are all the Jim Smiths writing comic books these days?
Some of the news stories today, I actually cut out some names. So for all of you extremely ethnic, long, 15
What's
syllable...
with all these immigrants writing books? I'm kidding. That's a joke.
Yeah, email.
I'm extremely progressive.
No, it's a it's Stephen L. Ansack and art by Nick Marinkovich. So, a side note, it is lettered by Steve Seeley, who is the Mark. That's the brother of Tim Seeley.
Yeah, he did a lot of the lettering for
Devil's
Due.
Okay,
he did lettering.
So, if you've checked out Loaded Bible by Tim Seeley, Steve Seeley, his brother, letters Nightwolf. The tagline to this series is, "It's not as simple as good versus evil." And the first passage of this book sets that up perfectly. It starts off, "Last night, the night of the full moon, two things happened that I am certain of. First, a man was murdered in a most gruesome fashion. And second,
I murdered him. I can see it. It's in capital letters.
Stop reading my notes. This is the zero issue of the new series from DDP. And at 99 cents, it was worth every penny, plus more. The art alone could have carried this book. It is a beautiful exercise in light and dark with truly fantastic brushwork. This Marinkovich guy, watch out for him. Because for all of those playing at home, think of this as a little bit of Sam Keith mixed with Ben Temple Smith. It was a tasty drink. It was cool. It's definitely ink brushed, but it's kind of dark and dreary. Not like Temple Smith's 30 Days a Night. It's more think Sam Keith with the Temple Smith from Fell. So it's a lot of dark and light, very moody, but man, it was gorgeous. I mean, just absolutely gorgeous work. While the art for the book was enough to hook me, the story is engaging, powerful, and was a perfect lead-in to what may become a new look at the anti-hero. Everything in this book reveals parts of the story that I don't want to spoil, so I'll just say if you like werewolves, mystery, inner conflict, and some really kick-ass art, you should check out Nightwolf. What the heck? It's only a buck. So, Nightwolf issue zero is my top of the stack. It's by DDP. It was only 99 cents. So, really good. Tom, have you had a chance to? Here.
It's sitting right in front of me.
I got it right here. What's wild is that the cover didn't really sell me. And it's not that the cover art was bad. It's Georges Genty did the cover, but it's nothing like the interior art.
No.
Check that out.
It's a very simple cover.
It's not bad.
You wouldn't be able to tell what's in.
The cover's more of a design piece as opposed to an art piece. Is how I would describe it. And I guess I'm an art director, so I can say that. But what do you think of that, Tom?
I think it looks like Sam Keith, Ben Temple Smith.
Oh, thank you.
No, it's because you told me that.
I guess I pegged that one.
No, it's
nice.
It's good layout. Nice use of shade.
Yeah, I mean this first page. Matt, Matt's like, what?
Shade.
What are the? I can't see it.
I'm gonna hold it up to the Bluetooth and.
Matt, did you have a chance to check this out on Wednesday this week?
I didn't even see it on the shelf.
Nightwolf, it's a buck. Go get it.
It's a
man.
Dollar.
It's go to the. You know what it was? They were sold out of that hipster trendy indie snob.
It's not as simple as good versus evil.
It
never is.
Well, the main character's a werewolf, and so I'm not going to spoil it. It's really good. Okay, I do have a shout out to Jersey Drozd, who I've got to get myself. He's a guy that listened to the webcomics episode. He listens to our stuff, I think, before that. And he is a webcomic artist. And he was kind enough to send up several samples of the books that he's been working on that are available as webcomics. The one that I really liked was The Replacements, and it's by Sarah Turner and Jersey Drozd. And check out all of his stuff at Make Like a Tree Comics, and that is, I'm going to totally get this web address wrong, but it's MLT.
Hey, what's up, everyone out there? How's it going?
Tom, talk to the people out there.
So, anywho, it's funny. I was on the train the other day.
Anyway, go to the forum. Check it out. I talk about it. Jersey's a poster there. Really good guy. Check out the replacements. He sent me also previews of Make Like a Tree comics. What I love about him is that they are fairly kid-friendly. I don't know if you want your like, four-year-old to read them or read them to them. But, like, for preteens and teenagers, very, very cool, fun stuff. But even for old, long-in-the-tooth comic book fans like us, very fun read. So check out The Replacements by Jersey Drozd, and that's D-R-O-Z-D. I hope I didn't butcher his last name. And the link for the site is on our forum and the webcomics link. So.
He's the same last name as the drummer for the Flaming Lips.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe that's him.
I just raised my eyebrows for you, and I was shocked.
It could be.
I wouldn't have thought.
All right, guys.
I mean, it's not. I think
that is our top of the stack.
Top
of the stack. All right, guys. Just have a few announcements here to wrap up the show. First of all, I would like to announce that we are now proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. The CPN is a collection of the best comic book podcasts on the net. You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com. Bruce Rosenberger and his comics podcast crossover has been named the official podcast of the network, and I would like to thank Bruce for having myself and Drew M. of the Weekly Specials podcast on last week for a discussion about everyone's favorite spy, James Bond. Please remember to check out Bruce's show, Comics Cast, and that's with a K, K-O-M-I-C-S-K-A-S-T. It is one of my favorites. Tom and I talk about it all the time. Bruce is one of those guys that talks about comics that no one else talks about, and it's not because they're bad comics. It's just because no one
else
talks about
them. Because you're too stupid to know about them.
God, <Tom. laughs>
Bruce will show you why you're wrong.
Bruce talks about, you know, old stuff, new stuff. He talks about a lot of small press stuff. So
you won't hear what he talks about on other podcasts.
Exactly.
Unless we steal his news stories.
Matt, I know that the iPod took a dump on you, but do you listen to Bruce's show?
Yeah, I do. I really enjoy it because half of the, like you said, half of the stuff that he talks about I've never heard of, but it makes me want to go out and try and find them.
Yeah,
I really enjoy the crossovers.
Yeah. Oh, it's I just did one with Drew M, who does Weekly Specials, which isn't a comic book podcast. It's one about, you know, new DVD releases and that kind of stuff. But Drew is a great poster at CGS and on our forum, so he's definitely in the comics community. Speaking of the forums, I would like to thank all of the great forum posts this week. Those posts make our jobs a lot easier. Just so everyone is aware, we post next week's topic on Tuesdays at both of our forums. We have a forum at aroundcomics.com, which is growing and changing every day and is a lot
stronger.
Of fun.
Yeah, it's really grown, guys.
Yeah, it's cool. Matt is a poster there, and we really enjoy his time there.
His sharing's caring. So,
and we have another forum, which is at the comicgeekspeak.com, and that has really kind of become the hub of all comic book
anything.
Podcast
you don't even like comics if you're not posting there.
There are seriously like 14 comic book podcasts that have their forums.
My brother got a forum there, he just read Planetary last week, and that's the first comic he's
read. I sent Brian Deemer an email that we were going to have a forum about comics with monkeys, and you were going to be
the moderator
on it. So, and Brian said he would think about it. So,
okay.
No, he died.
Well, what? Oh, son of a.
So
there's a lot of really good monkey comics coming out soon.
So
too.
If you like comic book podcast, you know, we obviously are thrilled that you're listening to ours. But if you want to check out some other ones, go to comicspodcast.com to get links to all these other great comic book podcasts. or go to comicgeekspeak.com to their forum section, and there's like 14 of them there, and you can kind of check them out that way. So Around Comics and Dark Tower are pleased to announce that Michael Avery and Joe Bucco, the creators of Werewolves, Call of the Wild, will be in store and in studio on Friday, June 30th for a book signing and guest appearance on the show. Check out their book at cotwcomic.com and listen to Around Comics for more information on the appearance. That's a couple weeks from now.
That's 2 weeks from now.
It is 2 weeks from now. Talk to Mike. He is excited.
Is he excited? Is he pumped?
He's
pumped. Ready to go?
He's ready to go.
Is he ready for what you have to do when you're here live?
It's our first signing, so.
Okay.
Mike is saying. He's our guinea pig.
It's not like you guys are showing
The beatings, the yelling, just the yelling beforehand.
All right. Tom, this is because of you. Here are a couple corrections and clarifications from last week's episode. This is last Monday's episode. Our fact-checking department informed me that the fantastic webcomic Butternut Squash is located at www.butternutsquash.net.
I don't even want to know what butternutsquash.com
really,
came out
it's
as.
It's a really good webcomic, but I said it was at butternutsquash.com, which is a totally different site.
So it's the Midwest number one place for Butternut Squash.
Butternut Squash is a very good comic that has actually been picked up by Ape Entertainment, so check that out at ButternutSquash.net. I incorrectly spoke that John Hook is the writer of Revere. John Cook is in fact not the writer.
He's a big fan.
No,
PR guy.
He's the PR guy. Revere is written by his very good friend Ed Wavely. So
sorry, Ed.
Yeah, sorry, Ed. But John Hook, we still love you. So
yeah,
so,
like you.
All right.
We love you, but we're not in love with you.
All right. Sal, we hope that that your lovely daughter is feeling wonderful. I hate producing the show. This probably
I hate watching Chris produce it almost as much as I think he hates.
I'm
we're
jittery.
Like a second away from deleting everything, just constantly teetering on the edge of like
the red button.
Yeah, I just
touch the red button.
I just it's like we're so Sal's like a calming presence and.
Yeah, he comes
next
in.
To Chris.
He comes in, he sets it up, he's like, All right,
let's go.
Let's go. That's how I roll. And I'm like, all right, from Chicago.
From
this
Chicago.
Is.
This
and
is
me, I'm just like, so many knobs and dials and buttons.
And if you can't tell, I don't do anything. I show up.
poor Matt. We've been recording this show for like
five hours. Yeah. We're going to edit this down to a real tight hour, 45 minutes.
All right, Matt. We're going to call you back in 5 minutes whenever I think we're ready to go.
After the sixth time.
You ready?
We're 90% of the way towards Avenue at Work, so really just give us a call back.
So, Sal, we...
And
we have realized how much we need him.
And if you're listening to this and it's only coming out of one channel out of your stereo, just unplug the other stereo and just center it. I assume you're listening to it on your hi-fi and not on your headphones.
And send me hate mail. Matt, thank you so much for hanging in with us today. We love the topic. We really enjoyed having you on the show, seeing you on the forum. You're one of our favorite
listeners.
Being
around you.
And that, I mean, you're officially, you're part of the gang now. You're a contributor. You'll get your...
Thank you very much.
Are you coming to Wizard World Chicago?
Yes, I am. I'm going to be there on Saturday.
Are you familiar with the Chicago gang term called running the L? That's where you line up and we beat you from neck to feet. And after that, you're officially part of the gang. Now, we're going to say you're part of the gang because we assume you will take that beating like a man. But
you get a merit badge.
I'll buy you a drink afterwards.
I think he just hung up.
He hung up. No, he didn't. Are you there? He's shocked. He doesn't know what to say.
Yes. I will accept the beating.
Just take a beating like a man.
Well, Matt, you've been there from the beginning. I think that you actually were one of the like three people to listen to episode one of Around Comics, and you've been there from the beginning. So we really appreciate your support as a listener. You're one of the guys that makes it fun for us.
Dedicated masochist. Enjoy.
Yes.
the first episode.
Poor bastard.
You enjoy being kept on hold. Anyway, are we at 2 hours yet?
Yeah.
Do
probably.
We need to vamp to get up to two?
I'm trying to let Matt.
Oh, sorry.
You know, say his.
All right, go. I'm sorry.
Here it is, Matt. Here's your last chance.
Well, thanks very much for having me on. It's always a great show, and I keep looking forward to it every Monday and now every other Thursday or so. It's a great show. All right. Keep up the great work.
Well, thanks.
Well, we appreciate checks in the mail with the exterminators.
Yeah.
So, all right, everyone. Tom, thank you for keeping things afloat today. Everyone, have a fantastic week. We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week, where the panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.